Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.
I'm staring down in my park.
I've got snots. The wind gave me snots.
The wind! He gave me the snots! Oh, it's just my bag. Silly.
We should write a cartoon.
Okay.
I have a lot of ideas, you know.
I know.
I'm like an idea guy. I'm not really a follow-through guy.
Yeah.
But I'm an idea
guy.
Yeah,
me too. I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. No, you're not. It's not going to happen. Just think about it.
I do a lot of things.
Yes.
But a lot of things, I'm like, oh my God, we should. And then...
Right.
I don't do anything about
yeah.
it. Hi, Kimmy!
Hi, Cass!
We are having a little tiny windstorm. Not bad.
No, it's not bad. Enough to make the chimes go.
But it's springtime, mm-hmm. and I don't know about you, but yeah. I'm allergic to the Chinese elms.
Oh, God.
Which I love. I grow them. And the pine tree next door is just like shedding yeah. bright yellow pollen all over my breathing.
Yep.
So... we're having a time of it today.
There's all kinds of stuff in the air. Plus the fire still, there's still stuff coming off the mountains from the fires.
I smelled smoke today. Or like that smell of a campfire that's gone out. Like
yeah.
the way your hair smells when you come home from a camping trip.
Mm-hmm.
When the wind started to blow, I was outside and I was like, who's got a fire? What?
Yeah.
Oh.
That happened to me too.
Whoops.
Yeah. So many smells.
So, also just PS update to listeners who maybe listened to our Menopocalypse episode. I've now been bleeding for a good 30 days.
30 days, folks.
With migraines and
oh.
boob pain and you name it. Cranky mood. So, this better be the end. If it's not...
it's gotta
I'm
going
to need to speak to the universe's manager.
It's got to be. I mean, it's got to be.
And then I was like, this feels awful. Today I was like, I feel horrible. Like I had a migraine last night. I woke up with like a hangover to my migraine in the morning. And my boobs hurt and I had cramps and I felt fat. I was just like, bleh. This is awful. If men had to feel this way, they would take care of it. There would be
no babies.
There would be a magic pill to fix it.
Mm-hmm. But we handle things. That's what we do.
That is what we do.
Yep.
All right. That's your Menopocalypse update. Tonight, we're going to be talking about women's history. And Kim and I each picked one woman from history, and we did not tell each other who we picked.
No!
Tell me what area your person is in. Like, what did they... were they a journalist or a...
all of the areas.
Okay. Mine was mostly a photojournalist.
Oh, you had the Family of Man out on the camera.
Yeah, that's the prop I was talking about. It's like my favorite photography book ever. And she had one picture in the very back in that book.
Who is it?
Her name is Lee Miller. Have you heard of her?
Oh, yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I don't know that much about her, though, so learn me up.
Oh, you're going to be flabbergasted.
Flabbergasted.
Who did you pick?
I'm not telling.
What?
It's a long story. Go.
Okay, I'll talk about Lee Miller. So the reason I got interested in her was last weekend, my friend that lives... in Boston. She lives in the town over from Salem. The Salem Film Fest is happening right now, but because of the pandemic, it's all online. So she was like, hey, the whole film fest is online. Do you want to watch a movie with me? And I said, sure. So you like buy a ticket and then they send you an access code and you've got 2 days to watch or whatever. Excuse me. So there was a documentary. It was an hour long called Capturing Lee Miller. And I had never heard of her. But this documentary was so fascinating. Not the work. The work she did is fascinating, but her fucking life is like, what the hell? And when we were done watching it, both of us were like, I want to be a difficult, artistic, fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants, sleep-with-all-the-people kind of woman. Like, she took no prisoners. So, her real name was... And the reason I was thinking, maybe I had never really thought about her. Maybe I've seen her name before, but didn't think that it was a woman's name. You know?
Because right.
Her real name is Elizabeth, but she called herself Lee professionally. So she was born in New York, 1907, and she had a very interesting upbringing. Like, her father was an engineer, but he was also an amateur photographer. And it turns out that he had taken artistic nude photos of her whole life.
Oh.
And so... today, looking back, you could see that as him sexualizing his daughter.
Yes. Yep.
Right. But this documentary went on to interview another woman who had grown up with artistic parents, photographer parents. And she said, in my family, everyone was always naked. It wasn't a thing. We weren't bound by those same rules that society was bound by, and it wasn't sexual. So, like... the way we see it now is like he took really inappropriate photos of his daughter. What he also did was teach her about photography during those sessions. So when she was 20, I think, she went to New York and was standing on a street corner and almost got hit by a bus. A man in the crowd grabbed her by the collar and pulled her back. The man who pulled her back, who saved her life, was Condé Nast.
Oh, my God.
The publisher of Vogue and Vanity Fair and all those. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
So he had an eye for models, and she was very beautiful. So he asked her to be a model for Vogue.
Wow.
And that helped fuel her love of photography. So she worked as a model, a fashion model for Vogue and other places around New York. At some point, she wanted to be in Paris because that was the center of the world then, right?
Yeah, that's where you go.
So she went to Paris for a little while. It wasn't quite debaucherous, but she felt freer there than she did in the U.S.,
and a lot of artists did during that time period.
Right.
Especially women and people of color.
Right.
Because it was a different climate.
Exactly. So she ends up going to find Man Ray, the famous photographer, and walks up to him and says, I'm going to be your student. You're going to take me on as your intern. And he said, I don't have students. And she said, you do now. And he goes, well, you have bad timing. I'm going away on a trip. And she said, I'm coming with you then. And they went away on the trip. She ended up working for him, living with him. They were together for like 3 years or something. One of his most famous styles was called solarization. And it was something that she actually accidentally invented. But because she was working for him, he got to take all the credit for it.
Right. Also something that happened quite a bit.
To women. Right. Yeah. So she was apparently not only a great photographer, but she was really good in the darkroom, too.
So wait. So at this point, she's financially independent because she's a model, right?
Right.
Or she had been, or she had her own money.
And her family was in the sort of upper middle class. Her dad was like a civil engineer or something like that. So... she wasn't wanting for money, yeah.
But she had that financial independence. She earned a paycheck, which also back then wasn't
easy. But she would tell people like that she felt that photography was one of the only ways that a woman could succeed on her own independently.
Oh.
Because it didn't matter if you were a woman or a man if your pictures are good. She did have to get her foot in the door, and that's what she did with Man Ray. He has a couple of very famous photos where she's the model. There's one where there's a metronome with an eye on the pendulum. Mm-hmm. That eye is hers. Her oh, eye wow. that he cut out of a... So he wanted to marry her, and he was much older than her and not attractive. She was like tall and beautiful and young and wanted to be free. And at the time they were in this scene, the Bohemian artistic scene. It was like right. Picasso, Salvador Dali, you name it, Edward mm-hmm. Steichen, like everybody was in this group that they were in, and they were all about free love.
Right.
When it came to men. But because she wanted to participate in that part of the Bohemian lifestyle, Man Ray was really upset. Like, no, we are going to get married. We're going to have babies. We're going
to... You blah, 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 blah. Belong to me.
You belong to me. He wanted to possess her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, sorry. Bye.
Later.
So she had several lovers while she was there. She ended up coming back to New York and opening her own photography studio.
Wow.
Because in Paris, she was also working for Paris Vogue there. As a photographer, and was coming up with all kinds of new, innovative
oh my gosh
ways to take photos. And anyway, so she comes back to the U.S., sets up a photography studio with her brother, and as soon as it starts working, and she's got, you know, she worked for Vogue New York, Vogue Paris, so she had the connections, and people were sending famous actresses of the time and models and heads of state were sending to get their portrait done by her in New York. But she was very restless. So as soon as the studio was a success
mm-hmm.
and it became the same thing all the time, she started to get very restless. At the same exact time, like within months, she met an Egyptian called Aziz something or other. I've got his name in my notes somewhere, but he was married, but he met her, fell in love, which apparently any man who met her at the time fell in love with her, divorced his wife.
Ooh.
His wife committed suicide. So that placed some guilt on Lee, and she ended up agreeing to marry him
oh,
because wow. also he wanted to move her to Cairo, and he was very wealthy. So she was restless, wanted to get away, didn't want the success of the studio because it meant having to do the same thing every day with the same people every day.
Right.
So she married him and went off to Cairo. She lasted there for a couple of years, but during that time, because she was basically on lockdown, she was somebody's wife now.
Right, in a very different culture.
In a different culture.
Very patriarchal.
Right.
Yeah.
So she started to get very restless and very bored. She would take off by herself into the desert to take photos.
In the desert?
In wow. the desert. And some of the photos that she took ended up inspiring some of the surrealistic painters that she knew, surrealist painters that she knew.
Oh.
So it was during that time where she again gained more knowledge. Her photography started to become more like art when she was living in Cairo and trying to escape right. her life. And apparently her Egyptian husband was very kind to her, very generous, very wealthy. And realized that she was unhappy and knew that she was happiest in Paris. So he said, why don't I buy you a ticket, a plane ticket? You can go to Paris for a little while, get happy, and come back to me fresh.
Wow.
So she goes to Paris.
Thinking where this is going.
Yeah. All hell breaks loose. She meets and falls in love with this this English surrealist and poet and writer. His name was Roland Penrose, and he ended up becoming a lord later. You know him?
Penrose,
yeah.
Vaguely.
So they didn't get married right away. She went back to Aziz after a month or two and was like, I'm really unhappy. I'm going to go back to Paris with my friends. I'm in love with somebody else. And he was like,
God.
I don't care if you're in love with somebody else. I'll let you go. That's fine. I love you so much. I'll let you do that. But will you let me hang on as one of your lovers, as one of your admirers?
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Good for her. She's... Wow.
So they didn't get married right away. It wasn't until later when she found out that she was pregnant that she actually divorced Aziz and then married Roland. But before that happened, she was living with Roland. So she met David Sherman while she was living with Roland Penrose, and he ended up moving in with the two of them, and they were a threesome.
Okay.
So he is also a very famous photographer in his own right.
Is this in the 40s now?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the lead up to the World War.
Okay.
They are in London. The bombs start dropping, and she starts photographing everything. So she's headed straight for the death and destruction, and she's taking very surreal photos of, like, a dead guy on the road or rubble, and she's framing them in the way that they are not only photojournalistic, but they're also artistic. So Vogue says, we want you to go take pictures of the war.
Oh, my gosh.
But she didn't know how she would do it. And so then she thought, well, I am an American. Let me contact. So she contacts the U.S. Army and tells them she wants to be an embedded photographer. And they allow her to join up. And she's one of the only women on the front lines. There's like four women on the front lines or six or something like that.
So she joined the Army. She wasn't part of some other, like, journalistic association or anything. She was like, no, I'm going to go balls out.
I want to be on the front line. So she did what she could in London.
Wow.
And she ends up on the front line. She takes photos of the liberation of Paris. She takes photos... at the liberation of the concentration camps. She's there.
Yeah.
There's a photo that is so haunting, and Vogue published it.
That's how I know her name. She was there with,
what?
Dorothea Lange? No.
No, there was another woman there.
Oh, my God.
But that woman, from what I read, that woman wasn't even, like, as far in as she was.
No, because she was part of, I think she was with Time or Life or Time no. Life.
She was in the Army.
Right, but the other woman was
right.
She was, okay, got it.
So there's this photo, this haunting photo at one of the concentration camps outside of the camp in a creek or something. One of the SS officers has been killed by the Allied forces. And he's floating dead in the water, but just under the water. You can't see the lower half of his body. That's heavier. It's down in the water. But his face is kind of up. He's on the side. And it's hauntingly beautiful, this horrible photo of this dead dude in a creek.
Right. The light and all of the other elements of it.
She was taking photos of the cattle cars. They were opening up cattle cars and there were just bodies in them. And the way she was framing them made them both awful to look at and artistic.
Wow.
So she takes all these photos and writes an article and sends it to her editor and says, please, people have to see what's going on, because the world didn't really know the horrors of the Holocaust yet. They knew there was a war and that, you know, Hitler was a bad guy or whatever, but what was happening in the concentration camps wasn't well known.
Right. It wasn't documented.
So the day that, I believe it was Dachau. So her and David Sherman were photographing together. They had been to Dachau. They photographed all these horrors. They had been on the march. They were photographing rubble. The same exact day, they march into town where Hitler's secret apartments are. The Allied forces, I think it was an American troop, had taken over and were using it as a base. His apartments. He wasn't there. He was somewhere else.
In his bunker.
He hadn't killed himself yet, but he does later that same day. So liberation of Dachau, she's there, she photographs everything, goes to Hitler's apartment, photographs everything. Photographs guys laying in Hitler's bed. Photographs dudes using Hitler's phone.
Wow.
David Sherman takes a photo of her. She's in Hitler's bathtub.
Oh, yes. You've I know seen this it? Picture. Yes, I know this photo.
She's naked in Hitler's bathtub.
Wow.
There's a portrait of Hitler off to the side, and her yes. dirty ass been to the concentration camp, marched through the streets, shoes are on his white floor on the white rug mm-hmm. with dirt all around them. She is simultaneously washing herself and washing herself of the horrors she had seen that day.
Right.
And in a way, I thought, like, kind of disrespecting Hitler.
Oh, God, yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I just stared at that photo like, what the
It's, yeah, it's one of those pictures that you can't, yeah. Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Yes. And then later that day, Hitler kills himself. So she was the driving force behind the world being able to see these horrors. Mm-hmm. It was her.
Yeah.
Calling her female editor going, you have to. I know we're not a photojournalistic magazine, but the world has to see this. And she didn't consider herself a writer, but the article explained what was happening, and the world just didn't know what it was. So, of course, after that, she goes home. And she, on top of being restless her whole life and never wanting to be tied down, now has a very serious case of PTSD. What they know now is PTSD.
Right, yeah.
At the time, they were saying she was having depressive episodes.
A nervous breakdown.
Whatever. So that took a toll on her relationship with Roland, but they stayed together until she died, even though he had, like, affairs, and I'm sure she had affairs and whatever. But she ended up marrying him after she found out that she was pregnant. And to make her better, he bought her a house in the country, like an estate in the country. She is a restless soul. She likes people. She likes being right. naked at parties. She likes sleeping with men. She likes drinking and smoking. She
right.
likes the action. She likes danger, all of it, the excitement.
Oh,
and
God.
So moving to the country had the opposite effect that he thought it would have.
Oh, my gosh. How horrible. I mean, right. just she'd be isolated and oh,
exactly.
it'd
she
be
was
like
isolated.
A cage. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So she continued to photograph occasionally, like, and she does have one photo in the family of man, and I think it's a photo of her son and a cat or something. She had taken all of these haunting, beautiful, wonderful pictures, but the one in the family of man is just of her son, and then it's in the back where all the other women photographers are.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. It became increasingly hard for her to even operate a camera because it reminded her of what it she was, saw during the war.
Yeah.
I mean, she was right up on all the gore and the blood and the dead babies and all of that. So it triggered her every single time she tried to take a photo.
Oh my God.
She eventually learned to cook like a gourmet, and she would throw these fabulous dinner parties for her very astute artist friends. Like Picasso would come over and Max Ernst, and she would just make these wonderful parties for them, and they'd spend the weekend and drink and whatever. So she kind of healed herself with cooking, is the way the story goes, but she was never quite the same. And her son didn't know any of this until after she had died.
Oh my gosh, wow.
She hid all of this from him.
Huh.
So he ended up finding, I read one article that said 60,000 and another article that said 80,000, but in the movie that I watched, they said 60,000 negatives of her work.
Wow.
Both her as a model and her as a photographer. And he started printing them and archiving them. There's a museum now. He's written several books. There's a few movies or documentaries. But he had no idea. She hid all of it from him.
How old was he when she died?
I don't know that. She died in 1977, so she was 70 years old when she died.
Wow. And she must have been in her
30s or 40s when she was born. Yeah. Her son showed a picture during the documentary of her in her elder state, just laying on the couch depressed with her coat over her.
Oh.
And he said, this was the Lee I knew.
Oh, wow.
Like, she was depressed all the time. He didn't know the fun-loving, like, nymph of Bohemia that everybody else knew.
Right.
Also, she was investigated by MI5, the British Secret Service, on suspicion of being a Russian spy.
A Russian spy?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. She, what?
I think that has more to do with a woman that, like, gives no fucks.
Right. And she's in Cairo and she's going places. Right. And she's not afraid to do stuff. So exactly. She must be up to no good.
Right. People described her in so many ways. Draw your own conclusions, but it was like, she's difficult. She's beautiful. She's breathtaking. She's unsentimental. Restless was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficult one got me. And we all know difficult people, but
right.
I feel like women get that label if they just don't serve people, if they're not
right
playing their role, which she obviously didn't. And she didn't mind telling anybody. Every man that she broke up with or whatever, like, she told them why. Like, no, I want to sleep around.
This is what's going on. Yeah.
Right?
Wow. Just totally authentic and not trying to make everybody happy.
Right. So I have one last tidbit of information. It was in 1969, the New York Times interviewed her and they asked her what it was that drew her to photography. And her response was, quote, "It was a matter of getting out on a damn limb and sawing it off behind you."
Wow. She was a badass.
She was a badass.
Wow, and what a time to be so free and, you know what I mean? Like, oh, wow.
One of the documentaries I watched, a fellow photographer that lived in Paris at the same time was like, before the tourists started coming, it was the center of the world. It was the center of art. Mm-hmm. He said, you could show up to Paris with a dollar, start drinking on Thursday on the right bank and end up down the road on the left bank on Sunday and don't remember how you got there. So you could see where that would draw someone like that. Just being free. I don't know. I was very attracted to that idea. Like, that I would never want to live that kind of life because that sounds like hard, like right. A hard life. But like, I greatly admire her freedom.
Wow. Yeah. And to have such confidence and strength at that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, she had money. And when she left her husband, Aziz, he set up a trust fund for her. She never had to worry about money her whole life.
Oh my gosh.
So she had beauty to trade into money and talent all along.
Right.
But that's why she could be an independent person, because she was beautiful and white and rich.
But there's plenty of beautiful women out there. I'm wondering, what was it about her that made these men just fall in love with her head over heels? Like,
maybe it was her freedom,
devotion, her authenticity, her, like, this is what you get.
Exactly.
And it's pretty awesome. So, you know, fuck you.
Fuck you.
So fuck you. You know, to have a beautiful woman who's going to be subservient and
boring
and pleasing and, you know, fit in that little mold, that little box. That's not very interesting.
Mm-mm.
But to have a woman who's beautiful and also forthright and adventurous and interesting and intelligent and curious and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
What a package.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that she never shared any of those stories with her son. I wonder if it was out of...
Well, he opined that So she had been sexually assaulted by a family friend when she was 7 and contracted a venereal disease, an STD.
Oh.
At 7 years old.
Oh, God.
So her mother took her to the doctor and they got a treatment that they had to do to her. It was never said what it was, and it had to be done several times. And she was told that it wasn't to be spoken of ever again. And so he was saying, you know, in that time, you didn't tell people things like that. And so she had this sort of brutality about her and also secretiveness. And he said, you know, he said when he set out to try and figure out who she was, interviewing people and all that, he said he felt like he was learning about maybe a family friend, not that he was learning about his mother, because that's not who he knew. He didn't know that person.
Right.
So he thought that that secretiveness came from her early trauma of her going, oh. And maybe she decided when she got married and had a kid that it was time to close that up, you know?
Well, and maybe motherhood changed her.
Maybe.
I mean, I know that I changed a whole lot.
Right.
When I had a kid. So maybe, you know, maybe her perspective changed.
Right.
And she wanted to protect him, or I mean, who knows what her motives were. But that's interesting that she... It was sounds like a transformative part of her life.
Right.
Wow.
He did say that he felt as though she wanted him to find all this out because it was like she had left him a breadcrumbs and these, you know, boxes and chests filled with these pictures, but nobody knows. I mean, the people that they interviewed knew her. She never really told him anything. He didn't know any of that.
Wow.
Can you imagine, like, growing up and figuring out your mom was some fucking influential...
Right, being in your 30s or 40s and then all of a sudden, like, oh, what? My God, this... What?
There are artists that say, like, the reason that women are allowed to be allowed, but like her photography, the way that she framed those particularly the war photos, mm-hmm. ended up like informing war photography from then on. She did that.
Right.
She was the one that got the world to see the horrors of that war. And, you know, people don't know who she is. And she had such an influence over all of our lives.
Such is the way of women.
Yes. Okay, let's take a break, and then Kim's going to surprise me with her lady.
Hanging over the edge. Sicker than you planned. So please waste my
Kim.
Freaking men. Am I right?
Am I right, ladies?
Am I right? Well, I had...
Wait,
do
you need a drum roll? Because there's drums right there.
Oh. Ooh, now I want to tell poetry again.
Who's your lady?
There weren't that many female beats. Were there any female beats?
There was one. But they didn't like, that group also didn't like women. They didn't think that women could do it.
They were, it was muses. A boys club, mm-hmm. for sure. Well, and they were, some of them were, you know, there were a lot of gay guys mm-hmm. in the beats.
That doesn't make them not misogynist, though.
No, just makes them not that interested in women, maybe.
Yeah, but...
on some level.
On a sexual level.
Isn't that where it starts? Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so I couldn't pick a woman.
You couldn't pick a woman?
There were... I struggled with it, and I started thinking of artists and all these women throughout history, and so I went a little more global.
Oh.
So Women's History Month On March 8th, 1857, women working in factories in New York City protested poor working conditions. Mm-hmm. This is during the Industrial Revolution. Everybody's working outside the home now. Not everybody, but many people, children included.
Poor people.
The first Women's Day celebration in the U.S. was in March of 1909, also in New York City. In 1981, Congress established National Women's History Week to be celebrated the second week of March. So we got a week.
Oh, nice.
In 1981.
We still don't have equal rights, though, but go ahead.
Right. We're still trying to get those equal rights. In 1987, it became a month-long acknowledgement of women's struggle for equality and celebration of women's accomplishments. Mm-hmm. We don't have these things for men.
Men don't need them.
They don't need them.
Every day is man's day. All the history is men's history.
So I started thinking about women and all the women in my life personally who are important to me and what they mean to me and what kind of example each one has been mm-hmm. for me in my life. Mm-hmm. And that made me think of how profoundly we influence each other.
Oh, yeah.
And the men in the world.
Right. Well, that's a common trope, the man behind the woman. Like, behind every great man is a great woman.
Right. But really, behind everybody is a great woman.
For sure.
Many, 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 many
great women. But they try to diminish women's accomplishments by saying...
Right.
And taking credit. I mean, all of those women that worked at JPL and NASA and, you know what I mean?
Oh, like, my God. Yeah. There's, what's her name? The painter woman she painted all of those paintings. I can't remember her name. There was a documentary about her. And her husband took credit for all of them.
Oh, yeah. Man Ray took credit for some of Lee's photography at first.
Of course.
One of the reasons she... I'm sorry to go on about her. I find her very fascinating.
She's amazing.
One of the reasons she left him was because in France, people had started to call her Madame Man Ray.
Oh, my God.
And she was like, no, 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 no. I'm my own person. I'm not an appendage of his.
Right. I'm not...
Sorry. Go ahead.
So I asked... I was sitting with my family. I asked my husband. I said, who's the most important woman in your life? And without hesitating for a second... He said, my grandma.
Oh.
And,
Is this his mom's mom or his dad's mom?
His mom's mom. And I said, well, why? What did she do? And he said, she loved me unconditionally. I always felt safe with her. She was fun. Mm-hmm. She was nurturing. She loved me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and then my brain exploded into 1,000 pieces.
Right.
And I asked my kids, and they're both like, well, you.
You are pretty
and
great.
And I went, I'm their mom, right? And I said, you know, not, you don't have to say that because I'm asking you. Think right. of someone else. And they were both like, I can't think of anyone. So I thought of it as a more global thing, like how important we all are to each other mm-hmm. and how women fit into this patriarchal society that we live in.
Right.
And Lee illustrates a lot of these ideas with her life.
Right.
So I wrote these ideas down.
Yay!
And then we can discuss if you want.
Discuss amongst yourselves.
Originally focused on working conditions, then equitable compensation and accomplishments, Women's History Month continues to focus on the long, difficult battle we have endured in a male-dominated society, which is, duh. I mean, duh.
Don't you feel it's kind of like a re-education? Like, every time you hear about a woman that you've never heard of before, you're like, how come nobody told me about that? I feel like I'm always getting re-educated. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, it's true.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, how come that wasn't in the history books in school? She did some really amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. And not just because she was a woman.
Right.
And that's another part of it that's like another piece of the inequity is that because a woman does something in a certain period of time, it makes her exceptional, even though maybe what she did was not that exceptional if you think of everybody as being equal.
Right.
But because, you know what, it's just a...
You're a woman photographer. You're a woman astronaut. You're a woman car driver.
Mathematician.
Right.
Engineer, whatever. It's fucking maddening. A patriarchal society by nature does not value the intrinsic and evolutionary contributions of a woman to humanity, except for a woman's physical attributes. Mm-hmm. Which creates conflict within genders individually, but also in relation to one another.
Right.
It becomes the focus.
Yes. We've talked about this many times.
Yeah. And how, you know, men see women as an object, a sexual object, and women will mirror that because that's how
that
they
creates
get their
validation of some sort.
Validation, yeah. Power. It's, you know, it's unfortunate. I think it's important that we learn to compartmentalize. Pardon me, lick my finger. No hand sanitizer right now. Physical characteristics that may indicate a healthy and desirable host for progeny and the ability and willingness to care for offspring in a way that fosters human evolution.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm just thinking.
So, we're animals. Here's the physical part. Okay, so, you know, and women do it too. We want to pick a mate that's going to produce some healthy offspring.
Right.
Men do that too. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. That's what keeps the human beings on the planet. But what helps the human beings evolve overall?
Right.
Is something else. I'll get to that in a minute. While it is inevitable that women struggle for equality in a society that continually demotes them for the sake of a gender-based hierarchy, the power lies in our desire to affect humankind post-reproduction.
Oh, you mean where we are right now?
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Where we were after we had our babies. Mm-hmm. And which makes me also think of Lee and how she changed.
Right.
We do this by caring for our offspring into adolescence and beyond, longer than any other creature on Earth.
Which makes you wonder if, let's use Paul as an example, not that he objectifies women, but he said that his grandmother loved him. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't an object to him. She was love and laughter and family.
And safety and comfort.
And that was his prime example of a woman. Why do men then go out into the world and objectify women? Is it all about biological reproduction? Is it society saying your mother and your grandmother are separate from the sexual world? Treat these women like shit, but not these ones. I mean, right. You know that old thing where, well, what would you do if that happened to your mother? You know, and men are be like, oh, I'd be be upset if somebody said that to my mother, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you should just be upset that people talk like that to women, not just your mother. So where does that disconnect happen?
Right.
Why?
The conundrum lies in the juxtaposition of seeking equality in a patriarchal system that defines our greatest attributes as less than. As we struggle in this closed system, are we validating it? So, right, where's the beginning and the end? Where's the answer? So, if we... It's a big fucking spider web. I mean, we are caretakers by nature, I believe, mm-hmm. to some degree.
Well, not most people, not everyone.
Not every single woman. Yeah. Some men. I mean, it's not obviously black and white. But when a woman becomes an object just for reproduction, and she identifies as that, and finds her only value in her physical appearance, mm-hmm. and how much attention she can get from men because they're at the top, how does that impact her caretaking abilities, not to mention her own self-worth and identity? And then how does that translate into the future, into our evolutionary process, our social, emotional, and mental evolutionary process? Mm-hmm. The physical part's already taken care of.
Right. That works out itself.
It's just that's
except there are societal brain. Changes in what beauty is,
right?
You know, throughout history, but it doesn't vary that widely. So, where's the break in the loop?
Where's the break in the loop? How do we get out of the closed system?
We participate in the system so that the system continues because we are biologically set up to do that.
Right.
So if we continue to participate in the system, we're perpetuating the system.
Right.
We have to wait for our captors to decide that they want to set us free. Was that what you're saying? Or we create an island where there aren't any men? I was wondering this the other day. Men have millions of sperm, right?
Right.
Each woman can carry one child at a time.
Right.
Why do we need so many men? I'm not man-hating. Don't get me wrong. But I'm saying, biologically, it's weird that there are more women than men.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there's almost the same amount. Like.
Well, and it's, I think, at that point, you start getting into... you know, you go way back into evolution. So if the women are home at camp and they're taking care of the babies, nursing, because the baby's going to die if they're not with mom, and the dads are out hunting, they've got a greater chance of dying, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess
maybe.
So.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a sociologist.
What?
I know, right? Oh, my God.
Ay-ay-ay.
I've been lying. But it just occurred to me that one of our greatest strengths and attributes is taking care of each other, mm-hmm. and teaching our offspring and each other and men and our boys and everybody. This is how you take care of the humans. Mm-hmm. It's not just about food. It's not just about reproduction. It's also about empathy. It's about identity. It's about acceptance and unconditional love and doing what's best for the community,
right,
and humanity at large. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every time we try to do that on their terms in the patriarchal system.
Yeah, it's always on their terms.
We get, you know.
Except the Me Too movement, even though it had to happen in this system that we live in, happened over a more democratic internet. Mm-hmm. The word got out, was able to spread because we didn't have to rely on a newspaper editor or a television producer or something of that nature.
Right.
So that might be why that took off like fire, because women were finally like, oh, wait, we can just tell each other. Yeah, me too.
We can share this. Yeah. And when I share it, it gives somebody else the courage to also share it. I had that experience during the Me Too movement. My neighbor, we were outside talking, and she just...
Kerplunked?
She just kerplunked on me, and I was like, wow, you just shared an enormous chunk of your life, a very personal, painful part of your life with me in the middle of the street right now. Right. And that's so awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm going to protect that forever. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it was an amazing connection mm-hmm. with her. And we need more of that.
Yeah.
Also with the menopocalypse, you know?
Right.
We're flying blind, and it shouldn't be that way.
No.
We need to share that kind of stuff.
I think that there's this stereotype about women that we're all at each other's throats all the time, and maybe that is true of some women, but I don't feel that.
I don't either.
And I think that's the key. Like, if we're not competing mm-hmm. for men, and we're not trying to be more beautiful than somebody else or whatever right. in the eyes of men, then we can just help each other and be kind and cry and whatever, you know?
And isn't that, I mean, maybe that's part of the evolutionary process, is being released from the competitiveness. Well, and it's, I mean, it, I guess it has its place. You know, I look at my daughter. She cares a lot about how she looks. She puts makeup on, does her hair, all these things when she goes to work. Mm-hmm. She's at a time in her life where she's starting to look for a mate. And
right.
historically, you know, she probably would have been married by now, like 200 years ago, or 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. She, mm-hmm. she would have had babies by now.
Right.
So then... Yeah, and as we grow older, we don't need that anymore. We have wisdom to share.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to compete.
Right.
So, I don't know, but it feels like, you know, we're stuck in this patriarchal, closed system. And I want to know how we get out. And it feels like... it's going to be really hard. It has been really hard just to get as far as we are right now.
Well, and the pandemic set womankind back enormously.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
What is it, like 40% of women permanently lost their jobs or something? Because they're the ones that are, quote, responsible for the child care. If kids aren't in school, the moms are the ones
they make less.
And they make less. So, of course, it makes more sense.
Right. I make less than you, so I'm going to quit.
When Ella got sick mentally and got kicked out of fifth grade, yes, that happened, and the director of the program was like, you can homeschool her, it'll work, you can do it, I'll help you, you know, the whole thing. Doug made more money than me.
Right.
So of course it was me. Of course. It would have been anyway, because that's just who I am. But... that we did right. that personally in our yeah. lives. We looked at the situation and went, okay, somebody's got to be at home.
Yeah.
So, and I was glad to do it and also a little resentful. Ouch.
It's, there's definitely less freedom to do what we want to do, unless you're Lee.
Well, she was independently wealthy, too.
Right.
And beautiful.
And I think that there's a big hormonal shift, too, when you have kids. Like, your priorities change.
Mm-hmm.
Just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's not valued. That used to really, really bother me when I was younger, in my 20s. Like, I'd see feminists fighting for women to, and this is my view from like the 70s and 80s.
There was a shift in how feminism worked, but yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so I can bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan.
Right.
Why do you have to do all of that? Why do you have to have a job and make money and be beautiful and keep house and be a great mom and
keep
a hostess?
Everybody sane and keep everybody washed and
right.
Yeah.
Why do you have to do all the jobs? That doesn't sound like
that hasn't changed that much.
No, it hasn't. But that was my view of feminism at some point. And I got resentful of it. And I remember distinctly thinking, how come being at home and taking care of your kids isn't held in the highest esteem ever? This is before I had kids. It is a hard, hard, hard job.
Right. You have to look at it from there. I've thought about this a lot because when I was at the publishing company, all of the women that had started the business were like 20 years older than me. And so I was having children. They had adult children, right?
Right.
Their attitudes towards even how long you should be at work were way different than mine. I was like, okay, you're paying me for 8 hours, I'm going to be here, and then I'm going to go home after 8 hours. I've got things to do at home. Right. But that's not how they thought. And so I would think about it a lot. Like, they came from a time when not poor women, middle-class women, had to stay at home. They didn't get to work. They didn't have that luxury.
Right.
So them coming from that era, it was more of a struggle for them. You could see that maybe they thought of child rearing and being a stay-at-home mom as the shackles,
right,
to fight against.
Right.
Whereas the work that they had done had set up our generation to be like, you could do either or and all.
Right, yeah.
And they didn't appreciate that. They wanted us fighting the way that they were fighting.
Right. Which is... that's how you dismantle the patriarchal system.
Right.
You have to play the game to dismantle it.
Right.
Right? But while you're doing that, what's falling through the cracks? It's just, there's no fucking easy answer. God damn it.
God damn it.
It's frustrating. You know, it's in my mind, in my perfect little world inside my head, everybody does what they're best at, and that there's no judgment, there's no expectations on that whatsoever. I'm good at fixing shit around the house,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul's good at numbers and things that I'm not good at, and he does that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget what we're good at. And we expect the other one to do it.
Right.
And that doesn't work.
You know? I
know. And it's that way with every individual human being. And it's, I wish there was just universal respect and love and admiration for everybody.
Yeah.
From everybody.
You big hippie.
I'm a big hippie. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And everybody should smoke pot. Do acid. Yeah. So, I felt good after thinking about this, but I also felt kind of, I don't know, sad. I realized that There is no simple answer to Mm-mm. fixing it.
Imagine how Black women feel.
I cannot even begin to imagine.
They've got this on top of racism.
Oh, my God. Did you see 60 Minutes?
I don't watch 60 Minutes usually.
Oh.
What was on?
They were talking about race in the military.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God. Wow.
Yeah, Air Force specifically. And they talked to a man, and a Black man. And he said, there is not a day that goes by that I am not aware of my Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it defines many, many moments throughout my day.
Mm-hmm.
And we could relate to that as being women to some degree. But not that much.
Yeah.
Not that much. I mean, it really hit me like a ton of bricks. And it does hit me like a ton of bricks over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wrap my head around it.
Well,
it's a...
keep seeing it, though.
It's, yeah. There's no way not to, mm-hmm. but it's... God.
I saw a thing on PBS. They were showcasing this woman, a black woman, who lives in Detroit and runs a business there, a plumbing business. And so they interviewed her about, because she has started I don't think it's just for women, but like an association of plumbers for African-Americans and in her area. When she went to apprenticeship school, she was one of three women and the only black woman. Wow. The men started harassing the women just because they're women, because that's what happens in the trades. Mm-hmm. And the other two women quit. So she was the only woman left, black woman in a room full of white guys. And they harassed her physically, sexually. They put dead rats in her lunchbox.
Oh my God.
One guy grabbed her butt so hard and swift that it actually ripped her skin. And she said in that moment, filled with rage, she grabbed a plumber's wrench, you know, those big wrenches.
Oh, yeah.
And walked over and hit him on top of his hard hat as hard as she could. And turned around with the wrench in her hand to all the other guys who had been harassing her. And said, I am ready to kill the next person who touches me.
Wow.
And she said the look on their faces was like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. And they stopped harassing her. But when she got out into the workforce, she realized she didn't see any other black people. Oh, and she for sure didn't see any women over and over and over again. So she started her own business. And she hires black people, black women especially. And she started this foundation. Awesome. She's trying to get people into the trade. But I was like, she's a badass.
Oh my
Anybody
gosh.
Else would have quit. Those two white women quit.
Right.
But she was like, kill a motherfucker.
She's ready. She fought for it. She, oh my God. Wow. That's so awesome. Good for her.
All right. Final thoughts, Kimmy.
Oh, the strawberries aren't very good this year.
Isn't it too early still?
No, usually springtime.
Oh. My final thought is that my dog, Ziggy, the tiny black wonder, looks like, he knows I'm talking about him, he's staring right at me. Ziggy looks like a teddy bear mixed with a black wolf mixed with a goat mixed with the cutest boy I've ever seen.
Oh, he's so cute. Ooh. 10 tons of cuteness in your little tiny body, Ziggy.
He's my most loyal companion.
Oh.
My niece Asha calls him my ball and chain.
Oh.
Watch, look, I'm walking across the room.
I call my dogs the security detail.
No, I've come to love the visits, but I think I'm on my own. My own. Don't you love it when you leave?
Curio Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and CurioPodcast.org. And remember,